So we read this chapter, and what Frary is attempting to do here is to help us locate, first, is to help us locate in our own lives to kind of like learn how to like trace where the beginning of violence may be at, but always to recognize that the source of violence is always this fear that dehumanizes. Dehumanizes to the point that you turn other people into things, right? So you don't want you don't want the Iroquois to be Iroquois. You want them to be good Europeans. So you turn them into things that can be turned into Europeans. You want to obliterate their culture and make them something else, right? Okay. So Frary actually then is putting forward throughout the course of chapter 1, and I would recommend after you read it once, go back and reread it a couple of times. He's wanting us to move in the direction of a kind of praxis, but praxis has to be understood, praxis or practice has to be understood in terms of action and reflection. And sometimes what you have to start with is reflection before you can do it, right? Remember Dr. Owsley's aphorism? Do you remember Dr. Owsley's aphorism? Yeah. Who remembers Dr. Owsley's motto? Don't just do something, stand there. Sometimes you have to start with reflection, right? You have to look around you and figure out what's going on. That's the reason why. I know it all seems kind of silly, right? But I'm getting y'all to do a lot of silly stuff. I'm getting you to do a lot of silly stuff because you need to become more vulnerable. You need to become more vulnerable because you've adopted. I'm going to say it because I do it too. I'm not putting any judgment on you. I don't put it on myself. You've adopted the violence of oppressors, and you in turn oppress your own self to the point you don't even want to be silly. I mean, God, you know. We're basically glorified. I hope you understand that I don't think that this is completely, absolutely true. But we're basically glorified monkeys. And if monkeys can't be silly, I don't really understand what the point of it is. What's the point of being a primate if you can't throw shit at the wall? Right? What's the point of being a primate if you can't, like, you know, laugh at something that you find funny? What's the point of having this mind, right? And then making ourselves so oppressed that we confine ourselves and never allow ourselves to be silly. Because we're scared people are going to look at us and think, oh, that guy's some nut job. Right? So, you know, want us to do silly stuff. We do silly things. And we do silly things because we participate in these oppressions, right? I can talk about all manner of things. Y'all might see my wardrobe completely changed by the end of the semester again, because it used to be that I oppressed myself 7 years ago. Do you know how I used to dress up until the time that I got a job working at the university as administrative coordinator for a program? Do you know how I used to dress? I used to wear sarongs, right? I just put tie-dye sarongs around me and throw a tie-dye sarong over my t-shirt, and I just wander around just free and easy, not think twice about it. And I got a job working for the university. I mean, I still did stuff at the university before that. I got a job at the university, and I oppressed myself. I was like, I can't dress that way anymore. So I'll just start wearing pants again. And then, you know, wearing the sarongs and all the rest of that stuff, that wasn't a transgender thing. That wasn't trying to, like, break gender stereotypes. It was just freaking comfortable. And I didn't really mind it. Right? But I oppressed myself. And we oppress ourselves on a regular basis. Does that mean that we shouldn't learn to edit ourselves? No, sometimes we do need to edit ourselves so that we don't participate in cruelty. But On the other side of it, a lot of the editing that we do is something that's imposed on us, not in order to try to keep open lines of human communication, of loving communication, of open communication, but it's sort of like impressed on us because we need to follow propriety. So we need to do things that make us a little more vulnerable, things that make us a little more oppressed. We also need to understand how there are all of these structures going on around us that are oppressing other people more than they're oppressing us. Whether it's a non-American or it's somebody in the United States of America, right? So first you do this praxis. This praxis requires you to do a little bit of reflection. And so I ask you to reflect on chairs. I mean, you know, what's so oppressive about chairs? All of you in your nice little straight rows pointed directly at me, listening to all the words of wisdom and information coming out of my lips. What's so oppressive about chairs? What's oppressive about the fact you've been turned into at least seven numbers? Your birth date, your social security number, your UNT ID number, your driver's license number. I think there's two or three more I remember thinking of one time. What's oppressive about that? I don't know. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I don't mean to say that these things are all leading to that end, but you just ask somebody who's got one of those tattoos from Auschwitz on their arms about being a member. Right? We look. So the question is to look around ourselves and sort of see these things. And it's not actually also in this reflection of, you know, looking around and kind of like thinking about the day-to-day things that go on in our lives. It's not an issue of getting some big ego and thinking, oh, I'm so put upon. Right? Because that begins to turn into that self-love that dehumanizes. Oh, I'm so put upon. Oh. Keith wants me to read, you know, 20 pages before Monday. Woe is me. I've got so many things to do. Right? I have that reaction sometimes in a week. That guy wants me to read 140 pages before our next grad class. Oh, I'm so put upon. Right? So it's easy to fall into those languages. But in this reflection, in this looking around, you begin to reflect, and you have to find something. You have to find something to reflect about, to reflect on, and then really take it on as something that you think about. Because it's really important to recognize here the role that philosophy plays in all this, that theorizing is not the opposite of practice. Theorizing is a kind of practice. So when you contemplate, when you reflect on what's going on around you, that's what will lead to action. That's what will lead to action, this contemplation. That will lead to action. That action will lead to more contemplation, will lead to more reflection. It just goes back and forth and back and forth, right? And it becomes a way of life. Now, in this regard, then, of thinking about oppression, turning oppression into a kind of, you know, one of the things y'all might do well over the course of the weekend, as you're thinking more about this hatred is love for the non-existence or the annihilation of a thing, right? As you're standing around the bonfire or whatever y'all do these days. And you're talking to your friends about this or that. Or you're in between songs at the dance party or whatever. And you're thinking about this. Reflect on what oppression is. Okay? Reflect on what oppression is. What's the difference between impression and oppression? What's the difference?
Impression is taking something from somebody, and impression is leaving something with them.
Okay, so impression is pressing in. Oppression is
taking
what?
Taking away.
Could be taken away. Could also be confining. It could also be combining. So, what's the difference between oppression and repression? Oppression and repression. What's your name?
Joe.
What do you think the difference is between oppression and repression?
Oppression is like people look at you and how you look at yourself. And then repression is how you feel about it.
Oh, that's good. So repression actually has something to do a little more with, this is very much more I-centered or me-centered. Repress out of myself, repress back in. That means to press back in. Oppression actually seems to have some sociological characteristic to it. Impression means to press into, so that means either that means to make a mark. Right? This means to press back in. This means pressed upon. Oppression means pressed upon. What is depression? I want you really to be thinking about the fact that that oppression actually has a lot of stuff going on in our society. Oppression. Okay, so what's depression? Okay, depression is pressed down. And that's going, in other words, so depression can... Depression is a kind of pressing, is a pressing down to the point of like being drugged down, right? Okay. But notice, which of these words, there's even more. Compression would be to press together, right? But now let's turn these words around a little bit. Let's play these words a little bit. If I'm oppressive, that's not necessarily a good thing. I mean, everybody already kind of knows that to say someone is oppressive is a diss on that person. If I'm repressive, that's another kind of judgment, right? That means that I do something to myself. And what actually kind of happens in the relationship here is that a lot of social oppression structures become ways we repress ourselves, repress our own self. Right? If I'm depressive, people say that means I'm kind of a downer. I suffer from melancholy and depression. I know when I'm being a downer and I feel really down, and it's a thing to struggle with. But the depressive. Now this is very interesting about this word, impressive. That's actually a positive word, isn't it? He's very impressive. She's very impressive. Right? Because that means you leave a mark. Right? The mark's left. But let's think about these. You know, I want you to really be thinking about words, because it's thoughtlessness about words that actually, it's not just thoughtless words that hurt, it's thoughtlessness about words that keeps us not recognizing the kinds of silent ways, because we just sort of take for granted, you know, what people say. Kind of like silent ways, or ways we participate silently in these pressures. I want y'all to be expressive. I want y'all to find expression. Let me give you an example of what I mean when I talk about these sort of like silent ways that we don't realize that are. I'm going to say something. I want y'all to tell me if you think I'm right or wrong. Peace is a bad thing. Does that sound right? Peace is a bad thing. That doesn't sound right, does it? Peace is a bad thing. Most of the time people would say peace is a good thing, right? That's why we have justice of the peaces, and that's why we have peace, right? We seek peace. We want peace. We have peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers, right? Have you ever thought about the fact that peace only seems to last until there's another war? Right? Can't have peace without violence. And it's an interesting aspect of this sort of silent structure we get into, right? I've already said that we very well have gotten into this fighting a war, seeking the annihilation of cancer, the annihilation. Obviously, I'd love to see cancer gone away. But hatred of cancer, hatred of AIDS, hatred of this, hatred of that, it's all part of the structure of that fighting wars, of that violent structure, right? Peace is actually a term. Y'all are going to find this really interesting. Peace is actually a term of violence. Not just because it's the cessation of violence, but because of, and what do we want to like avoid? The etymological fallacy. But there's something hidden here that you got to like see. I want to like pull the cover off of. The Latin word for peace from which we get our word peace, pax. What do you think that word means? You think it means tranquility? Well, that would be the Latin word tranquilitas, actually. So no, it doesn't mean tranquility. You think it means serenity? That'd be the Latin word serenitas, so it doesn't mean serenity. It means to drive into the ground and break. You know, like you pack dirt. It's drive, it's a term of violence. It's a term that happens when the Roman armies had so broken another army that they had to sue for pax to recognize that they had been broken and driven down. It's a term of violence. Tranquility, serenity, enlightenment, wisdom. There's a lot of other ways to think about these ideas. Ahimsa, nonviolence. That's the Sanskrit word ahimsa, means nonviolence. To let go of violence, right? So I want us to think a lot about these kinds of things. This is what we're doing here, because inside of our way of living in the world of these, you know, just find something over the weekend. Think about what it is Shaler's talking about here, but find something over the weekend that just looks like an everyday old thing, and then just sort of like really kind of go at it. Think about it. A process you see all the time. Red lights. I'd love for somebody to come in here on Monday and say, oh, I thought all weekend about red lights. Kenneth?
About peace, is that like, so you can't have peace without breaking down your enemy, basically.
Right.
So there can never truly be like a peace for everyone.
No, and in fact, when Jesus is called, don't everybody go home and say Keith was preaching his Christianity. When Jesus is called the Prince of Peace, it's because he will drive into the ground and destroy Satan. That's why he's called the Prince of Peace. He will crush the dragon's head under his foot, literally. Right.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Huh? It would be great. I mean, it would be awesome, you know, because then at that point, of course, you have a metaphysical situation in which now peace doesn't mean anything anyway. Once he becomes Prince of Peace, peace becomes useless because war is obsolete. There is no longer any war. After that point, then that's the end of that. And so that's the end. You know, so metaphysically, it would be this place where you become that in order to cease being it. But the issue, of course, that we live in is we live in the regular world. And in the regular, I mean, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I'm a big believer in you know, there are more things in heaven and earth than in your philosophies, Horatio. But, you know, yeah, there's a lot going on. And in our day-to-day world, these power structures are constantly at work. I want you to be thinking about those power structures. I would actually, you know, this might be the best thing for y'all to do. When you're sitting around with your friends this weekend, in entertaining yourselves, thinking about things, interacting with people, asking silly questions, you might actually ask yourself, why did they make me choose a major when I came to UNT? That's a new thing they do. They haven't always done that. Why did they make me choose a major when I came to UNT? Well, let's leave it. Let's reflect for a little bit. Let's not have a knee-jerk, Let's reflect for a little bit. Now, what I'd like for all of you to do is to stand up and pair up. Stand up and pair up. 1, 2, 1, 2. Stand up and pair up. Look at each other. Y'all can move out a little bit. Okay, we're going to be silly. Is everybody got a partner? Is there anybody missing a partner? Anybody, you missing a partner? Okay, you come here.